30.
I think we should.
Is everybody ready? Let's begin the meeting. We'll call the meeting to order. For everybody on the line, this is the July meeting of the Montana Board of Regents, and I would remind everybody that we are recording this conference call. And so perhaps what we can do prior to roll call, we will ask the various campuses just to check in, so for purposes of the minutes, we know who is on the call. Who do we have with us today? What campuses are on the line?
Miles Community College.
UM Montana State
University. We have Miles and UM. Someone else got cut out there.
Montana Tech.
Thank you.
MSU Great Billings.
Great Falls College, MSU.
Great Falls. Thank you.
Missoula College.
Thank you.
MSU Billings.
Thank you.
Do we have everybody? Who just joined us?
Beth Weatherby in Dillon.
Welcome, Chancellor.
Thank you.
Good morning. Who joined us?
Hi, this is Jennifer with Senator Tester's office.
Welcome. Thank you for being with us.
You bet.
And this is Christine Hultin with the Governor's Budget Office.
Welcome.
And Chair Tuff, this is Siri Smiley with Governor Bullock's office.
Good morning, Siri. Good morning. Who joined us?
Kayla Spaller with the Missoulian. And I will mute myself.
Are there any of the other campuses that have joined us that haven't indicated their presence on the phone call? Okay, well, thank all of you for being with us today. As I mentioned, this is the July meeting of the Montana Board of Regents, and as we always do, we will start with roll call. Amy?
Thank you. Chair Tuff?
Here.
Regent Lozar?
Here.
Regent Sheehy?
Here.
Regent Berkey?
Here.
Regent Johnstone?
Here.
Regent Nystuen?
Here.
Regent Albrecht?
Here.
Thank you. Commissioner Christian?
Here.
Thank you. I believe we had a representative from the governor's office on the phone. Is that correct, Ms. Smiley?
Hi, Amy. I'm here, yeah.
Thank you. And anyone from Superintendent Juneau's office today? Not hearing anyone, I will mark them excused.
Okay. Thank you all. We do have a quorum, and so we will proceed. And first of all, in terms of introductions, I'd certainly like to welcome Regent Berkey to the board, our newly appointed student regent from MSU. We're in your neighborhood up here in the beautiful Flathead, so thank you for joining us, and congratulations on your appointment, Regent Berkey.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
We're glad you're with us. Obviously, in that same vein, would like to thank Regent Holman for his wonderful service to the students of the university system and the year that he spent as a member of the Montana Board. With that, I don't know if there are any additional introductions, Commissioner?
I don't believe so.
That you're aware of? Okay. Well, we will proceed to the approval of the minutes. The board and others have seen the minutes for our May 19th and 20th regent meeting at MSU Northern. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
It's been moved. All in favor, or excuse me, is there any comment about these minutes?
No comment.
Are there any comments from members of the board, campuses, or the public about the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor of approval, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion passes. Everybody should have received, additionally, the campus reports that were made available to us
electronically. I would ask the board if there are any questions or comments or Commissioner Christian about the reports. We'll once again want to thank the campuses for putting these together. We do read these. We note them. Thank you very much for that. Any questions? Regent Nystuen.
As the chair of the two-year committee, I was so pleased to see the number of references from the two-year campuses that are within the larger flagships and others as well. The reports from the campuses also have good information about the two-year, so I certainly took note of that and appreciated the work for shout-outs to the work that the two-year campuses are providing at the 4 years. So thank you.
Very appropriate. Thank you. That's a good reminder and a good comment. Additional comments on the campus report? Seeing none, we do have several items on our consent agenda, and given that this meeting, like most of our conference call meetings, we're not breaking into committees, it is appropriate to consider all of these at the same time. And the first thing I would ask is if there's any member of the board that wishes to remove any of these items from the consent agenda. It doesn't appear that there is, and so at this point, I believe it would be appropriate for a motion to approve the consent agenda.
So moved.
Been moved by Regent Sheehy. Are there any further comments from members of the board, from the campuses, or the public? Regent Johnstone.
Just an observation, I guess, back to the computer fees. I don't have any concern about approving this, but I'm wondering whether periodically we... ...whether the fee corresponds to the fee. How reasonably asking whether there's some periodic review and evaluation of that by the commissioner.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Regent Johnstone, yes. So we do a pretty extensive review of all the fees every other year of the biennium, May of the odd years when the fee metrics will come in front of you. I think it's a very valid point and one that we'll ask Chuck Jensen to dig into. Is his first year of this is not only the fee and the amount of the fee, but sort of the validity behind the fee and computers we are using, but there's probably a valid question in are there fees that have sort of outlived their time and place, and do those need to be sunsetted or changed, or, you know, as we bring other fees online, certainly for need, we should be looking at how all of those. I'll ask Chuck to make an even more comprehensive review of those in his first chance to review those items next May.
Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Johnstone. Are there any additional questions on these items that are on today's consent agenda for members of the board or campuses or the public? Hearing none, there's a motion on the floor by Regent Sheehy to approve the items on the consent agenda. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. The motion passes. Prior to moving into the action items on today's agenda, I know that we have several folks that perhaps have joined the call. Are there any campuses that previously did not identify themselves that are on the call at this point?
This is Lisa Smith at Miles Community College.
Danny Bingham Health College.
MSU Northern is on the call.
Thank you, Chancellor Kegel. Okay, another reminder, just if you would please mute your phones unless you're speaking on the call, that'll avoid the static that we sometimes get during these conference calls. We would appreciate that greatly. Unless you have music on your phone system, then please don't do that. So let us move now to action item A, authorization to replace turf at Washington Grizzly Stadium. And I will ask UM Missoula to introduce this topic to us.
I believe Kent is on.
Thank you, Chair Tuss and members of the board. This is Mike Reed at the University of Montana, and I appreciate you entertaining this action item today. The University of Montana has a turf field that was installed back in 2008 that was scheduled for replacement July of 2017. The field is in need of replacement. It's reached its useful life and hasn't worn as well as hoped. The fibers have become inflexible. The subsurface below the turf is heaving and is in need of some repairs. There's about $10,000 of repairs that were scheduled to be done this summer to get the field ready for play in the fall. There's an opportunity with field turf that is on a state contract. They are here doing work at the Big Sky High School Stadium, and they would be able to do the turf field for us this year, so a year prior than what was anticipated, and they would be willing to defer payment on that field until it would have been made the prior year. So basically we have the opportunity to get the field a year earlier. The cost would be basically the same, but there would be a savings of $10,000 in repairs that otherwise would have had to be done, and we would not need to make payment on the turf until the following year. And with that, I believe Kent Haslam may be on the line with us, and we'd be happy to entertain any questions.
Yeah, I am. I am on the line. Any questions, I'm happy to answer.
Well, one question that I have, and I think that there's perhaps additional questions. Could you confirm to us the funding that is available for this particular item? It's my understanding that this is entirely private funds that will be used for this project.
Well, here's Regent Tuss, this is Kent Haslam. The way this will be funded is in the football season of 2017, we had long scheduled to play the University of Washington. The University of Washington will pay us $625,000 to come play that football game. So we had built into our budget that we would utilize that one-time payment to take care of some of these capital improvements. The University of Washington has 90 days to make that payment. We pay them in early September, and so they can hold their money for 90 days and pay us in December. And so the way we would use it is we would, the Grizzly Scholarship Association would pay for that turf, and then we would repay that back to the GSA through this payment from the University of Washington. So you're correct that there are no state general funds that would be used at all for this turf. We'd long plan to utilize the payment from the University of Washington to help offset the cost of the turf.
Thank you, Kent. Regent Johnstone?
I think the question you asked was the same as mine.
Okay. Regent Sheehy?
Could you clarify for me, if we did this next year as planned, what would the process be? Would we be looking at the exact same issue next year at this time, but with different financial impact? Or would it already be built into a budget that wouldn't require authorization?
We'd be doing the same thing. We'd be coming probably next spring with the exact same financial plan, paying probably, I would say, more for the turf because the field turf is not here. So the financial plan would not change at all. We would still rely on the GSA to provide a bridge loan so that if we to fill that gap when the University of Washington paid us, and we'd be paying it with the University of Washington funds as well. So it would be an identical agenda item. One nice thing we have this year is I do believe we're getting a better deal on the turf because they're here already. They've also upped the warranty on it a couple of years longer. So we'll have a 10-year warranty as opposed to what's typically an 8-year warranty on the turf. So the funding would really be identical.
This is Martha again. So am I to understand that the plan that you had in place to do this next year was also based on this same funding mechanism with the Washington
Correct.
Money? Okay, thank you.
Correct, yeah, and we come before the Regents because what I believe is because it's an expenditure above $300,000.
Gotcha, thank you.
Regent Johnson.
Yeah, just one other question. The materials indicated that this is not subject to public bidding because it's pursuant to a master agreement with the state. That's been vetted through legal counsel and we're satisfied that it's acceptable from a public bidding standpoint.
Regent Johnstone, this is Mike Reed. That is correct. There's a master athletic surfacing agreement that's been vetted. It's gone through the state of Montana, and basically it's a pre-negotiated price for any agencies in the state.
Thank you.
Mike, I had one additional question, and I know that you addressed this at the top of our conversation here, and I know that it was part of the material that we received, but did you indicate that should we opt to go with the original schedule and replace this next year, there is a cost of $10,000 to, in essence, repair the current turf, is that right?
Chair Trust, members of the board, yes, that's correct. The athletic department had planned about $10,000 for this fiscal year 2017, to be spent in repairs for the turf. Kent can certainly expound on that if you want more details on that, but the intent was to, and they would still have to expend that if we don't put in the new turf, they would have that expense to be able to get the turf ready for play.
Chair Tuss, member of the board, this is Kent Haslam, and I would actually contend, I think that it will be more than $10,000 as we've now inspected the turf. The base is failing a little worse than we thought, so we would have to peel the old turf back, repair base areas, install more rubber, put the turf back down, and then spend money essentially that then we'd throw away as we replace it next year on the same schedule.
Okay. Thank you. Regent Albrecht.
Can you speak to the safety concerns that you currently have and how this will address those?
Regent Albrecht, members of the board, the turf is really not all that safe. It's very hard. It's compacted. The fibers are breaking. So there is a concern of how hard the turf is playing right now. So that's definitely a concern. This new turf will be there's so much new technology with turf. Field turf utilizes something that's called cool play. So they install a layer of cork on top of the rubber infill, which lowers the temperature now by 20 to 30 degrees. So technology has certainly advanced dramatically in the 7 or so years that we have since replaced this turf. We currently have field turf on our softball field. It's worn so well, and field turf is also installing in a number of different places around the state, as well as has their product at other places around the state. So we're encouraged that this would definitely help with the safety issues.
Regent Lozar?
So if I heard correctly, the guarantee on the field is 10 years. Now that we're doing it a year in advance, does the 10 years start this year or does it start next year as it would have been planned? And then a second question is, what's our overall fundraising plan to be in a position in 10 years to have the resources to be able to pay for a new turf?
The answer, and I apologize, I wasn't quite sure. I didn't hear who asked the question. But the 10-year, typically the warranty is 8. Field turf is extended back to 10. The 10-year starts when the turf is installed. So we're actually getting an extended warranty on this turf. The overall plan is that we do in athletics, we budget out a 5-year budget cycle. And always are ahead of that and forecasting these type of capital improvements. So we would certainly, part of what we do is we do go play these guarantee games. To be quite candid, the University of Washington needs a home game and we need new turf. And so they pay us to come play there. And so building these one-time payments of these large payout guarantee games are things that you can build in the forecast going forward to say, okay, we're going to need to replace this. Let's go out and shop for these, or we can always rely on the funding, the private fundraising side as well. You just build it into our budget, but the guaranteed gains are a great option to fill these one-time capital improvements that need to be done.
Thanks. Additional questions?
I have a comment.
Yeah, go ahead. Regent Berkey.
Levi Berkey, the new student regent, and I just want to thank the due diligence done at the University of Montana regarding this issue. And certainly I recognize the necessity of its purchase. I do have a challenge for the University of Montana, especially under the leadership of the new Executive Director for Communication, that they effectively communicate the purchase and then the funding mechanisms for this purchase to the students of the university when they come back to campus in the fall, because I feel like the optics of this are not exactly something students quite understand, and so I think effectively communicating that is a good move for the University of Montana and for the system.
Thank you, Regent
Berg. Public as a whole.
Great comment.
Thank you.
Are there additional comments from members of the board or questions from members of the board? Oh, Regent Sheehy.
Is there a risk of injury with taking on these games against these huge schools in order to fund these projects?
Regent Sheehy, there's a risk of injury in any game we play. There's no doubt about it. However, there's no connection. No, in fact, I think we could be injured in playing a Division II school, or we could be injured playing one of our counterparts in the SCS. We could be injured playing the University of Washington. We can certainly talk about the guarantee games at another time if you'd like. They actually are really good. Our student athletes really enjoy them. For the opportunity to go back and play in front of the University of Washington, play a Pac-12 school. We recruit heavily in the Pacific Northwest, so it's exciting for our student-athletes to go and play those schools. But candidly, there's a risk of injury whenever we play, but these are fun games for our coaches and especially our student-athletes. They enjoy that experience and enjoy that opportunity to go and play. We play at Washington in 17, we play at the University of Oregon in 19, then we go back to play the University of Washington in 2021. We try not to do one every single year, which many of our counterparts at some schools are even playing two of these guarantee games to make sure their budgets are met. And we're fortunate at the University of Montana, and I'd say at Montana State as well. I don't want to speak for them, but we get good home crowds, so we don't have to rely all the time on going out and just selling out to the highest bidder and playing these big games.
Thank you.
Are there any additional comments or questions from members of the board? I think what we'll do then, I will ask for a motion to approve this item, and we'll do this on all four of these items, or all five of these items, excuse me. And then, of course, we will have the opportunity for campus and public comment on each one of these. So I would ask the board, is there a motion to approve this item?
So moved.
It's been moved by Regent Albrecht. Are there additional comments on this item from members of the board or the campuses or the public? Any additional comments?
This is University of Montana. We have Jared from Channel 13 that has a comment.
I just want to clarify really quickly. I'm jumping in kind of late. So MSU is looking to replace a field that prematurely needs to be replaced, and UM wants to install that same turf, right?
I'd probably have to lean on Kent to answer that. Kent, were you able to hear that question?
I didn't hear it very well. I apologize.
I apologize. I need a little bit of clarification. So MSU needs their turf replaced, right?
No. Mr. Chair, I believe what the confusion is there is the company is in Missoula installing a new field at Missoula County Public Schools, Big Sky High School, now. So they're in the state doing work. That's the advantage we're trying to take in terms of having them in the state preparing. I don't believe there's anything going on at Montana State.
Yeah, okay, so UM is looking to put in a new turf. Okay, and
correct.
Here that is where it's like premature. Okay, so is that field still in warranty?
The turf that we currently have, I believe, is not in warranty, and it's another company that installed that turf, and so we are going with another company who we feel its product is good.
Okay. Are we aware that I've done some research. We're going with the company. I have it. It starts with an F.
Field Turf.
Right. Are we aware that there's other schools in the country that have used this AstroTurf, that it's like defective and people had to replace it, and there's a bunch of lawsuits? around this company installing defective AstroTurf?
I'm not aware of any of that, no. FieldTurf's installed a number of turfs at a lot of very large universities, communities, high schools, currently at Montana State. We play on it at a number of other schools, but no, I was not aware of that, no.
Okay. I have there's examples in – go ahead.
If I could intervene, this is Paul Tuss with the Board of Regents.
Hi.
Perhaps it would be appropriate. Kent, would you make yourself available to the press outlets following our meeting? It sounds like there's a significant number of questions here.
You bet. Absolutely.
I just think that would be appropriate. Okay. It sounds like we could go on for quite some time on this particular topic, on items that honestly I think that we're all pretty familiar with and we've covered on this topic.
So you are familiar with the lawsuits then?
Okay, keep going. Questions.
Excuse me?
So we are familiar that there's been lawsuits at other universities in the country, like in Middlefield, Wisconsin, that have all using the same AstroTurf company, but they're defective that they're putting in. Are we are aware of that or no?
This is Kent. I'm happy to visit with you offline and answer any questions from the media.
Okay, great.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Any further public comment? Okay, all in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, no. Thank you. We'll now move on to action item B, which is Chief Montana Underlying Investment Fund Challenge. Bayoshi, Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, I believe that we have Robin Graham available to speak to this, or Chuck Kim, but I think we're ready.
Chair Tuss, members of the board, this is Robin Graham. I'm with the Commissioner's Office, and I appreciate you entertaining this item today. The Board of Regents is the trustee over Achieve Montana, which is Montana's 529 college savings plan, and we enlist the services of Ascensus College Savings for our record keeping and to be our investment manager and assist us with the fund lineup for our participants, and they have brought forward a recommendation to replace the the Vanguard Prime Money Market with the Vanguard Federal Money Market. This recommendation is based on some reforms, and so they recommended to us in the best interest of our participants to make this fund change because the new rules allow investment managers to add fees and gates to money markets that we think would be harmful to our participants. So they found a better product, recommended it to us, and we considered it here at the office. And we also have an oversight committee that considers these and makes the recommendations to the board. So we're here today to ask you to approve this recommendation to allow us to make this fund switch, which is in the best interest of our 529 plan.
Thank you. Are there any comments or questions about this item from members of the board? Seeing none, it's appropriate for a motion on this item. Regent Lozar has moved the item. Are there any additional comments from members of the board or campuses or the public? Any additional comments? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, no. The motion passes. Action item C, a staff item from the University of Montana, Missoula. Mike?
Is that great?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Chair Tuss, members of the board. The University of Montana has the Staff item listed on there would be the hiring salary of the Vice President for Enrollment Management and Student Affairs of $170,000, and the head coach men's basketball going from $142,000 to $155,000. And then additionally, the one-time base payment for the Vice President for Enrollment Management. I'd like to talk just a little bit about what's taking place with the hiring of our new Vice President for Enrollment Management. As I'm sure most people know, the University of Montana is taking very seriously the enrollment challenges that we have. And as a result of that, there has been a national search that was put together using a search committee that was well represented across the system and the state. Through that search process, Tom Crady was selected as the number one candidate. He was highly recommended as the top candidate through the search. This is an area of significant need for the campus, and we need an individual with strong leadership and significant experience and expertise in this arena. Through the negotiations, after several iterations of negotiations with Dr. Crady, the president finalized on the permanent salary of $170,000 with a $70,000 non-base payment. With that, we believe that we've got an individual that would be able to come to the university and be able to provide his experience and expertise to guide us through a lot of the changes, restructuring, and things that are needed in that the part of the campus. So with that, I would open that for any questions or be able to stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mike. Regent Lozar?
Thank you. Good. Start with a couple questions. I'm really happy to see that the position was rewritten, and the university took a lot of time to kind of look at student affairs and enrollment management and kind of put it into the same leadership role. And I trust that when the university did that, that we are setting up this individual for success, because that's always a challenge when you're adding more responsibilities to a position, that that we're providing the appropriate support that they can do sort of what the predecessor did, as well as these additional responsibilities. But I was hoping that you could provide a little background on what were some of the specific things that were added to the position, so that we sort of know the context of which we'll be deciding on it, or voting on this this compensation.
Thank you, Regent Lozar, members of the board, Chair. The university took some of the duties and responsibilities from the Vice President of Student Affairs several years ago and placed those under the Provost. With the hiring of the new Vice President for Enrollment Management, it is Vice President for Enrollment Management and Student Affairs, but the emphasis is on the enrollment management. The functions that we'll be reporting back to this Vice President will be the returning of the admissions office, also returning the recruitment office also under that. And these offices are departments that Vice President Crady specifically felt were needed for him to be successful. So we don't believe that by shifting these duties and responsibilities back into this position that we're setting him up for failure, but rather these are offices and departments that he felt he really needed to have working cohesively as one unit in order to be able to restructure and realign the enrollment management and recruitment process.
Thank you.
Additional questions? Regent Berkey.
Thank you, Chair. This is probably for a question directed towards the Commissioner. I just want to understand a little bit more about the current policy regarding OG. You can summarize that.
Mr. Chair, Regent Berkey, so there is a provision that was passed, I believe, in 2006 or 7 when we delegated much of this authority to the Commissioner's office that allowed for one-time signing bonuses to be 10% of the salary, not to exceed $5,000. So there is a policy in place that allows for a recruitment incentive, if you will, to be used by us. But it certainly, and in the case of that, if we use that, then it wouldn't necessarily come to before the board for approval. This is certainly an extraordinary effort on behalf of the University of Montana and the president to attract the right person, and so we've exceeded the sort of automatic bounds in why it sits before you for your consideration. Does that answer the question?
I have another question. So has the board or the Office of the Commissioner of Higher Education ever considered something such as a performance bonus based on the work produced by an administrator such as this one?
Mr. Chair, Regent Berkey, certainly we have. It's even a discussion that we had last January, to be honest, whether we could create some performance metrics around a number of senior administrators and whether that would be valuable. And I think that's a conversation that honestly needs to continue, whether that incentivizes people to work in the right directions that are important to this board and important to the system, much like we've done with performance funding, to try to help focus the direction of individuals. I think that has warrant. And I would say, though, to this item, that I wouldn't confuse the performance expectations with just what it is, what's necessary in this case to entice an individual to quit their jobs and pack up their belongings and come to the University of Montana. And so I think what sits before you is more in that spirit of what is necessary to entice or induce an individual to make that career change and to come provide services that we certainly need and are requesting of them. And that is more of what sits before you than what I think ultimately will be performance decisions. And I think those warrant a conversation, and we should do that moving forward.
Thank you, Commissioner. And one final question for the UM representative. I think that I heard that the admissions director position is currently vacant. So I was wondering if they are planning on moving forward with hiring that admissions director position with the hire of Tom Crady as the Vice President for Enrollment Management and Student Affairs.
Thank you, Regent Berkey. So the university is looking at that. Tom Crady is looking across his entire operation, deciding what's going to be the most beneficial for him, looking at the potential of does he hire recruiters, does he hire somebody in administrative capacity. So I don't know that there's been a definitive decision on whether that position is going to be refilled or if it will be restructured. But it's something that Vice President Crady is evaluating presently.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Regent Lozar?
Yeah, so I know this is a fairly big decision at the university, especially with the reduction in FTE and some of the changes that are going on at the university. And so I'm curious to sort of know maybe the backstory, as much as we can discuss here in terms of the process and our necessary deliberations to attract this individual here. How did we come to the $170,000 and then the $70,000 signing bonus?
So, Mr. Chair, I can certainly add my knowledge of it, and then if Vice President Reed wants to add to it as well. The process was thorough. We spent almost a year advertising, searching for this position with a real thorough search committee, and they invested the time. Ultimately, this was the person that surfaced as who they thought was not only the best candidate, but far and away the best candidate. And I think the charge to the president from the committee was this is the right person, we believe, for the job, and supported the president in doing what was necessary to get this individual hired. And I think from there, the president entered into several rounds of negotiations, including some conversations, honestly, that this board probably needs to take up in the future, not about this item, but
one of the things was to make a significant career move like this is on a one-year contract, which is what we offer in the MUS, entering a school that has certainly seen enrollment challenges. We certainly need to acknowledge this is not the easiest job to walk into right now. And so I think as people looked at that, some of the questions in the early rounds of negotiations were, is there multi-year contracts available? Is there other vehicles available? And I think from a board policy's perspective, we sort of ran aground, if you will, on those other conversations because we don't have those. I think that that's a conversation that needs to be had. Currently, we only offer multi-year contracts for athletics and the two presidents and the commissioner's position. And, you know, that hampers our ability to recruit individuals to positions across the system. And that includes faculty, staff as well. But it particularly does in a sort of challenging environment position like this. And so I think the president used diligence. I will tell you that he certainly had some conversations with him. This is who they felt as a campus that they needed. I've not been involved in any of the deliberations when it comes to the search process or was not part of that committee. So I can't tell you how they got there, but I feel like this is an area that the president has clearly identified as a high need, if not the greatest need, for university resources to be focused. He was very committed to trying to work out a deal with Mr. Crady to be able to come there. And I want to, you know, be clear, that's not to suggest that the negotiations were difficult for Mr. Crady. I think he wants to be in Montana, and he wants to try to take on this challenge and lend his services to it. But like we all do, people have to make financial decisions that are best for our families, his family, and so ultimately that's sort of where the negotiations ended up. And I've told the president if this is where he thinks the greatest need is and what he needs to do in order to secure the person that the search committee recommended, that I would be supportive of that and certainly seek board support as well.
Regent Johnston?
Market here, so I guess deferring to the president, but it's, you know, the amount that we're spending bonus is substantially by a factor of 15 times or so in excess of what we've said our policy is, and I guess that's concerning to me. Sign of the future in terms of this level, then we have a pretty serious discussion about providing more guidance to the presidents of the university about what's appropriate.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Regent Johnstone, that is an excellent point, and I will tell you that in my time, we've never considered anything like this. I think it is truly extraordinary, and I feel like we all are stretching ourselves to get there and fill what is certainly an identified need. But I don't think that the slope is any slipperier than my office or this board wants to make it. I haven't supported anything like this in the past. I've already sent word to campuses. I don't support this in the future. I think truly this is sort of a one-off opportunity as we identify needs around the system and the challenges to fill specific positions. I think we should remain flexible in terms of having open conversation. But in my view, at least what we anticipate from the commissioner's office and what we would be supported moving forward, this is clearly outside the bounds of normalcy. And I would suggest, I appreciate the question because I like to be able to say in public, we're not looking for other campuses to bring this forward on every hire moving forward. I think it is truly outside the normal course and why I think it needs to be in front of you, but I don't really believe that we're encouraging this moving forward. And so it, you know, my sincere hope is that we're not ripe for a greater conversation on increasing the policy or changing policy that we have before us at this time. I think it served us well, and it's been sufficient in most cases. It just wasn't sufficient in this case.
Regent Nystuen.
Thank you, Chair Tusk. You know, every Memorial Day weekend up in the Flathead, there's a special tabloid to the Daily Interlake, and it shows a couple hundred of the best and brightest students from Flathead High School, Glacier High School, Whitefish High School, and so forth. And it shows a picture and what their extracurricular activities are and, of course, where they plan to go to college. And I've watched year after year University of Montana's prospective student count continue to drop. And President Engstrom certainly knows the enrollment challenges, but I debated whether or not to send that tabloid to him to show where the best students of the Flathead are going to go to college this next year. And U of M was outpaced by 5 to 1, 6 to 1 over other campuses here in the state. I sent that to Royce with the idea and she said, here's an idea of what's going on from the demographics of the best students in the Flathead Valley. Not trying to pile on or anything because he certainly knows those challenges. I had friends and neighbors, alumni say, what's going on at the University of Montana? Why aren't they getting a bigger share of the students coming here to Missoula? Roy sent me back a personal note that said he counted 25 students out of the Flathead that should be going to Missoula that are not. And it's pretty easy to see do the math on 25 students just from Flathead County that should be going to the University of Montana that are not, that could clearly help underwrite the cost of this extraordinary, you know, signing bonus. So if Mr. Crady, Vice President Crady, clearly has the, for lack of better terms, the secret sauce on how to make this turn around, I think he will clearly pay for himself and the resources that are needed to reverse the change in the enrollment trends. I think this has been going on for years. I know my son 10 years ago was considering go to a business college here in Montana, and clearly got no attention from the University of Montana at all, either academically or collegiately running. And I think it was the type of a thing where the University of Montana, in certain respects, expected students to come. They didn't recruit students to come to the level that other campuses across the state did. And right now, I think that while this is an extraordinary move to pay this type of a signing bonus, I think the world has changed considerably. And we have to figure out ways to drive enrollment using best practices and so forth. Along about this is considering the budget cuts the University of Montana has, is there the necessary funding sources for Vice President Crady to be successful to make sure that he has the tools, he and his team have the tools, for Vice President Reed, to make this happen, to make him effective.
Regent Nystuen. I did. Thank you, Chair Tuss, Regent Nystuen, members of the board. You know, I think the reality of the situation is the University of Montana understands and recognizes the challenges with enrollment. We realize that there has got to be a comprehensive system and an approach to recruiting, retention, and enrollment in general. And Dr. Crady certainly is coming with the expertise and the background to help inform and direct that process. As far as resources go, you know, bottom line is the university is going to need to prioritize its resources into this effort. And so there's going to be areas on the campus that we're just going to have to retrench on, not from a personnel perspective, but just in general. We just may not be doing some of the investments we've done in the past to make sure that we've got the resources there where Dr. Crady needs them. And then as Regent Nystuen nicely pointed out, if we can turn the needle on the enrollment, then those resources will come and we'll be able to backfill the other areas. But we are going to need to make a prioritization and strategic decisions to put those resources in the hands of Dr. Crady so that he can do those things that he feels are necessary to move the needle on enrollment.
Follow up, Regent Nystuen?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Vice President Reed. You know, I think a big part of this, too, though, is are you providing the resources for onboarding the students? So let's say we see a nice bump in enrollment over the next few years here. What are you doing as part of great, we got the box checked, enrollment increases up, but are you able to retain them? Because, you know, students need to assimilate into a university campus, feel like they're getting good value for their dollars and so forth. Is that part of Dr. Crady's responsibilities to make sure that students are not just there for a semester and, you know, it wasn't what it was all cracked up to be and leave? I know that that happens, but how is the University of Montana working towards making sure those students stay for several semesters and hopefully walk across the stage 4 years later or whatever it may be? So what kind of resources is he bringing to the table, Vice President Reed, to make sure that it's more than just increasing enrollment?
Thank you, Regent Nystrom. I guess I would address that in the sense of, well, we've talked a lot about the recruiting aspects of that, but the reality is the retention rate, the students retaining and then graduating after 4 to 6 years, is absolutely essential to see the enrollment grow. And some people will say, if you want to fill the bathtub, the first thing you have to do is plug the hole. And so it doesn't, and we recognize it doesn't help us if all we're doing are bringing in more students if we haven't got a system in place to be able to retain and maintain our students. The University of Montana is very competitive as far as its retention rates and its graduation rates. Part of the university's strategic goals have been and will continue to be to improve both the retention rates and the graduation rates. We've made a lot of progress over the last several years in doing that, though they could be much stronger. And in fact, we didn't see much movement on that as we're looking at the results for this year. So I think in total, you know, that's part of Dr. Crady's portfolio. It's a comprehensive effort from the first contact of a student until they graduate. That's all part of the process that Dr. Crady manages, and that he's got systems in place. They have a new system that had been purchased some time but had not been implemented or fully implemented on the university campus, and Dr. Crady is working very closely on getting that in place, and that allows them to be able to track the communication and the progress of a student from the time they're a freshman in high school until they graduate the University of Montana. And so those are tools that he has at his disposal, and we look forward to his expertise to be able to leverage those to help the University of Montana in its overall enrollment challenges.
Regent Sheehy.
I agree with a lot of what happened in this process. I agree with the determination that enrollment is the biggest problem at U of M. I agree with placing a priority on recruitment. I agree with the search committee. I agree with hiring Sheila Stearns to do it. Mm-hmm. I agree with saving money on the search. I agree with everything right up until it kind of broke down at the end when what I see as our recruitment bonus policy was completely exceeded. So I have some concerns about this because I assume that the search committee went out and told every applicant what the salary range was. I've never seen a recruitment that doesn't do that. I'm assuming I'm correct in that assumption, and that the 170 is at the top of that salary range. Otherwise, we would have negotiated with salary, not with recruitment bonuses. So what we did was we offered it probably the high range of the salary that was every applicant looked at, and then once the search committee was out of the equation and they were negotiating with the president, what was said by the search committee to every applicant in this process was basically taken off the table, because the 170 is now supplemented by 70. That may be a great recruitment tool. I don't think it's been that great for Tom Crady, because now he's looking at all of this controversy about whether or not we should have given him 70. I don't think it's great for other applicants, because we're going to have a stream of applicants who believe that what they're told about the salary range is not really true, that there's always more on the back end. So we're going to have a lot of applicants who think, I'll put him for that anyway, even though I'm not willing to take $200,000, because I can get 50 out of them on the negotiation table on a one-time bonus. So I'm worried about that. But I'll tell you what my biggest concern is, and it is not the slippery slope. It is the moribund and muddy level playing turf that our instructors are in. We don't give our instructors retention raises. We don't give them signing bonuses. They have been left out of any slope at all on salary. So I am very concerned about our ability and our rationale for negotiating with administrators in a way that we never negotiate, or in my experience, we have been reluctant to negotiate with our instructors. That's my concern. That being said, I'm really torn about this because I very much appreciate that after the 2 years that we've been, I've only been here 2 years, but we've been talking about enrollment at U of M for all this time. I do want them to place priority on this. If this is their way of placing priority, and I believe that Sheila Stearns and her committee found the best guy. I bet this is the best guy. And I want Tom Crady to come here, and I want him more than anything else to succeed. I wish this had not occurred in this manner. I wish we had negotiated the salary not outside of the base, but in the base, and that we were willing to say this is what that's worth.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Regent Sheehy, you make very valid points. And I don't mean this mimicking at all, but I agree with everything you said, maybe right up to the faculty piece. And the only thing I would tell you, and I think it's important that we say on this call, is that we do negotiate with faculty all the time. Those don't come before the board. As part of the delegation in 2006, my office handles a lot of those, but I will tell you, I don't suspect there is a week that goes by that we don't have this conversation at a faculty or staff level. Clearly, there's not a month that goes by. Sometimes there is not a day that goes by that we're trying desperately in a state, frankly, that pays all of our employees a little less than the national average. We work hard to try to retain employees the best we can. We work hard to try to recruit the best candidates to the job. And so this is actually something that we deal with often. We certainly haven't brought a signing bonus of this nature forward, and I agree with everything you say on that front. It is a challenge for us. It's a challenge that I felt like for the number of times that we've asked the president to address this issue, that this is his way of addressing the issue, and that I need to lend some support in him and his leadership to tackle that however he sees fit, and this is certainly an area, and I will tell you from the very design that the search committee set out in this on the job was, what's this job going to be, and that recruitment piece, enrollment piece, had a focus from the very beginning, and so the committee feels strongly about this, the president feels strongly about it, and so I think we're where we're at, but I very much agree with the sort of spot that we put ourselves in getting to this board item.
Thank you, Commissioner. Regent Albrecht?
Perhaps, Commissioner Christian, you can answer this, but I'm curious what the one-year contract, how much of an impediment that creates in the recruitment process, and how we compare to other university systems in utilizing that one-year contract.
Mr. Chair, Regent Albrecht, it's all a continuum of time that non-existent a while ago, very common practice now as systems around the country face the same thing we are in recruiting and retaining people, the stakes have kind of risen. And so it is getting used much more frequently. I think we do put ourselves at a disadvantage. And again, not just at an administrative level, but a faculty, staff, I mean, throughout the ranks. Now, I think, as Regent Sheehy pointed out, as soon as we put a three-year contract on the table at a board level, then we probably never sign anybody for less than a three-year contract again. At least that's been our experience at the athletic level. So it's a balancing act that I think we need to look at. I think it could be a very good board topic for Regent Johnstone's staff and comp committee. Maybe we need to look at best practices around the country a bit more and see how common it is getting used, whether it's used under sort of an exception to the rule or as the rule. That's information we could come back to the board with. I know all of our campuses, though, at a myriad of levels continue to say recruiting is a challenge. Recruiting to our institutions that are in need of and are in similar situations is a challenge, especially where we don't pay, you know, near what the national average is. We're in the 70% range of a national average on these hires. And so it's got us at a disadvantage already just on what we can put into the base. So the tool is worth considering, and we can do that at
a later date when we can spend more time on it.
Regent Lozar?
So I think we're pretty lucky here in the state that we can get some fantastic leadership in the university system at the 70% of our peer institutions. And I really like the fact that we have this 10% recruiting incentive. I think it is important to find the right people, incentivize them a little to come here knowing it's below national standards. And I'm fully in support of the 10% for Mr. Creedy. I'm really struggling with sort of what Regent Berkey brought up about the opportunity to tie this to performance. And yes, we talked very briefly about performance evaluations, I think, in our January meeting. But I really feel like now is the opportunity to talk about how we tie performance to compensation and how we tie specific performance to annual evaluations. Because I could certainly support the 10% recruitment bonus. And if we as a board commit to a $70,000 total package, that we somehow work the remainder of the 70 minus the recruitment into a performance-based incentive. I think what that would do is not only hopefully keep Mr. Creedy interested in moving his family here and doing everything that the committee really believes in, you know, going through this process. Everyone I've talked to says high energy, great ideas, new strategies. But I'd like to see this tied to specific performance and have it sort of outlined. You know, if it is truly the most important thing at the university, then we should certainly know exactly what is expected of Mr. Creedy in his first year, second year, and third year, and we should be able to articulate that. And I think we have that opportunity right now to identify what those metrics are. And work it into a system to keep him interested in taking this position, but at the same time ensuring for the university that we know what exactly we want to accomplish, not only having him physically in the position, but working towards on behalf of the university.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate those comments, and I appreciate the logic behind it. Interestingly, though, with administrators, I've often said it's sort of all based on performance. And to be honest, that's a little bit of Mr. Crady's thoughts accepting the job. Is when we don't have tenure at an administrative level, there's no guarantee of employment beyond the current year. Everyone is subject to a non-renewal notice January 31st, I mean, to be truthful, 100% of all administrator salary is at risk on a performance standard every year. And that is the unique attribute to the administrative side of the system, in that that's how we do these regents' contracts, is they're an annual contract. They don't need cause. They don't need anything else. And so, you know, I think the presidents on both sides of the divide and the chancellors throughout the system try very hard to identify and articulate the goals for their individual administrators within their cabinets, what they expect them to reach and achieve, and they certainly stand the risk of an employment opportunity on an annual evaluation process. And that's something that, as we move a performance conversation forward, we need to spend some time at. It's challenging, and it's not used very much around the country, I've sort of learned since that January conversation, because of some of the challenges that are presented in doing it in sort of a performance review in a public light all the time. And at the same time, we always have the ability to review anyone's employment status or their compensation on an annual basis, because they're purely annual contracts. We could come back in a year and say,
this isn't working at all, we want to move a different direction, or this isn't working very well, we want to change the compensation, or this is working well and we want to change the compensation in another direction. But again, I think what I said to Regent Berkey, this is more honestly an enticement to get someone to make a career move to come to the University of Montana under a fairly challenging set of circumstances, honestly, and the expectations will be incredibly high on these individuals than it is about a performance conversation that we've had.
So I think I understand the complexities of specific performance metrics and performance-based evaluations, and I understand that on an annual basis with one-year contracts that your employment is based on how well you do on your performance, but this is different than evaluating an annual performance. That's already going to happen. Right, that's already going to happen at a $170,000 level. I'm talking with the additional incentive. How can we tie that specifically to a set of performance metrics? So I think there's kind of two different things that I see going on.
Thank you. Regent Berkey.
Thank you. I too have been grappling with this decision. And as a student regent, right, I have this word student before my title, and I take that part really seriously in that I have an established constituency that I am really proud to represent, and those are the students across the Montana University system. And when we're looking at this issue facing the University of Montana, there's no doubt the crux of it is enrollment. And I fear for the quality of public education at that university, for those students, if this issue of enrollment is not addressed. And if the price of three out-of-state students is the price for that to turn around, I think the students of the Montana University system are willing to pay that to see the situation at the University of Montana improve. I would like to credit the commissioner staff for answering every question that I needed answered to make this decision that I'm going to do, and being available to talk these things through. And I'd also like to thank the outgoing president of the Associated Students of the University of Montana and the incoming president there, Sam Forsteg and Cody Meixner, for providing me with some really good counsel to understand that student perspective at the University of Montana. But I come to this position as a regent with the belief that the most important job of a regent is to protect and strengthen the Montana University system. And there's no doubt we have a campus within our system that is struggling right now. And when one campus struggles, the whole system struggles. So yes, this is a very large upfront cost. And this position probably isn't going to solely solve the issue facing the University of Montana. But what this position can do is lead an institutional shift that I think is much needed for the university to succeed. And so I'm not alone in having the highest expectation for not only Mr. Crady, but also President Engstrom to address this issue facing the University of Montana with the greatest sense of urgency. So that's the issue of where I approach the issue before the Board of Regents today. Thank you.
Thank you. Regent Johnstone.
Well, I'm going to support the motion. I'm going to vote to approve the engagement of this position and the compensation it's arranged. But I do believe, and since I'm the chair of the staff and compensation committee, I think it's appropriate for me to work on this. I do believe that we need to spend some time on policy and practices, at least with respect to higher administrative positions in terms of the compensation structure. There's a whole variety of ways to tie compensation to performance. There's a whole variety of ways out of the marketplace to provide for signing bonuses or provide the consideration that the employee desires and the protection that the institution deserves. I think we need to do some work on that and provide more guidance and structure to
Thank you, Regent Johnson. Regent Sheehy.
I really appreciate everyone's willingness to comment on this because you brought me along in this discussion. I really appreciate hearing from the other regents. And it has come to me that what my problem is with this is that I just think it's bad strategy. I think it's bad strategy to offer a one-time lump sum big payment to someone who doesn't have to stay beyond a year when we know we can't evaluate performance within that year because his recruitment won't come to fruition for another, at least another season. So to me, this seems like bad strategy. On the other hand, if it works, it's the best investment we ever made. So I appreciate, especially Casey, your coming forward with your concerns because it clarified my views on this. And I don't know what I'm going to vote, but I will tell you this. I agree with you that if not in this case, in another case, if we could divide this payment up so that it, without providing a two-year contract, we said we give you a 17 this year, 17 your second year if you stay, 17 your third year if you stay, that kind of incentive where we're getting something out of it and still retaining the one-year contract, that seems like better strategy to me.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Regent Sheehy, I don't disagree. I would just tell you this, and I think some goes to Casey's point too. It wasn't made in haste, and it wasn't in a vacuum. A lot of what we're talking about has been considered, including performance, including staggering it. You know, we had even Kevin McCray and Viv involved, Viv Hamill. If you spread it out over multiple years, then do you create an expectation of employment beyond the one-year contract? I mean, there's just kind of a myriad of issues that are around it. But I think at some level, whether it's right strategy, wrong strategy, I have my own opinions, which I don't necessarily need to share. But I think I wasn't that close to the discussion and the decision. I think we have to look some to President Engstrom and the negotiations that he was involved in and the leadership that he brings. To some extent, this discussion is as much about the strategy, the president. He was the one that was there. He was the one negotiating. He was the one working with his office, my office, others about what can we do, you know, sort of vetting these various options. I think a lot of those have been vetted. So I don't mean to suggest that we didn't consider all those things. This is sort of where the president got in his negotiations. And I suppose not only could we have seven opinions around this table, but we probably have close to a million around the state of whether this is the right answer or the wrong answer. I think I've told the president I appreciate him trying to address one of the greatest area of concerns and that I have to try to bring some support to the table to say you've got to run that institution and find the best people that you can to do it, and we will try to empower you to do that, and I will try to get board support to empower you to do that. And I think that's sort of the bottom line of where we sit today beyond some of the things that we've just discussed, and they have tremendous value. And I think, Bill, Regent Johnstone, you're right on track. We should talk about these in staff and comp because we will be in a competitive environment facing many of these issues again down the road. And I think some guidance from the board, are we headed in the right direction, the wrong direction, would be very helpful. And I can tell you I do know enough about this item to know that they exhausted many avenues, including base conversations, including, you know, just a sort of myriad of different options, ultimately getting to a spot where this is kind of what a highly valuable individual to us was willing to make the move for.
Thank you, Commissioner. Regent Lozar.
Maybe just back up slightly, and I don't want to beat a dead horse here, but outside of the individual, there's been a lot of talk about the recruitment plan, a comprehensive system and approach, putting a lot of energy and effort and reprioritization of a budget and strategy of campus. What exactly is the plan around enrollment and recruitment that will get the university to the place that they want to be? Is it analyzing sort of the enrollment field and the trends in higher education enrollment, and to be super successful at this juncture is to maintain a certain number of students that we're recruiting every year? Is it a 5%? Is it a 20%? What exactly is that plan that, mm-hmm. you know, the minute that Mr. Crady steps on campus, he knows this is where we got to go? And I don't know if I've heard that quite yet.
So, Commissioner.
Chair Tuss, Regent Lozar, I mean, that's an excellent question, and I think that you're right. This goes way beyond one individual or, candidly, one $70,000 inducement to come here. It is a strategy, and I think that's, you know, we've asked the president to look at this much more holistically. This is one piece in a very complex picture, and I think that needs saying just in terms of Regent Sheehy said it. I mean, I don't expect Dr. Crady's month on the job will have a dramatic shift in enrollment patterns come fall, right? I mean, this is going to take time. But what I do believe in my heart, and I've said at the University of Montana in a number of meetings, is that I think enrollment can be managed. And that's the sort of the first step. They need to look at it much more as a system that we can manage. What will the growth be? What will we do to meet student needs, entice students to come? I mean, there's a myriad of different things that institution systems around the country employ to get students there, from recruitment efforts, buying names, to how do you capture those. I think they've got to look at all of that. We're hopeful that good leadership in these various positions, including the one we're talking about today for Dr. Crady, will bring new ideas, new methodology, new life to managing enrollment at the University of Montana. But beyond that, they need to work with faculty on what is it that students need, the relevancy of their courses, the expectations of their students, the employment market out there, the employability of their students. I mean, all of those things need to be part of a much larger conversation that I believe the university is having and trying to have. I mean, that sort of started in the president's address to the campus last November. Certainly the shifts of employee shifts is what got the most attention, but I was there that day, as was Regent Albrecht. About 5 minutes of his speech was about the budget changes that were necessary based on the current enrollment. The other 20 minutes was about where do we need to head as an institution, and what do we need to identify as our core competencies, and what will be the relevant curriculum around that. You know, it's a much broader conversation that clearly the University of Montana needs to address, but frankly, they're not alone, not even alone in our own system. And I think that's a conversation that we need to continue, and how will our various institutions fit into the mix of educational opportunities across the system. U of M is certainly a piece of that, but that's sort of a large a question that I think needs to have continued focus from the campuses and from this board.
Are there any comments from members of the board?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about Travis McCure now.
Go ahead.
Kidding.
Additional comments from members of the board. Seeing Regent Nystuen.
Just a quick comment here that I guess I feel there's consensus that this will be approved, but I'd like to make sure that the regents are sending a loud and clear message that if that be the case, that we wish President Engstrom and Dr. Crady all good successes in making this happen, and we're fully behind this, that this discussion somehow today doesn't diminish his passion for taking on this challenge and making it happen. So I think we need to send a loud, clear message. We're way behind him on this project here. So.
Outstanding comment, Regent Nystuen, and on a positive note, and certainly send a message.
Send a message.
To all of our flagship institutions, that this board is fully behind their efforts.
This is an extraordinary item, and we're open for that type of consideration, but with respect to our policies and what we need to do to do the right thing.
Thank you, Regent Nystuen. Regent Albrecht?
I would just say that as one of our CEOs of our flagship institutions, this is a critical time, a volatile time, where we have charged our President Engstrom with making the changes that need to happen. And that charge is hiring the right person at the right time to move us forward. And I know that more than ever, this is incredibly timely. And so certainly I am in support of this, and we will be watching very closely to see the success of this individual in this role as he works with other members within this new and refreshed cabinet, and I am very hopeful that we will see the change that we need to, and I certainly hope that folks who watch us very closely know that there is so much more effort and scrutiny that is put into these conversations than what each actually even happens in this discussion, because we care deeply about our entire university system, and we do charge our flagship leaders in ensuring that we are carrying this forward. And under our governance, if that doesn't happen, then we have to continue to look at what are the next steps. But certainly, to your point, Regent Nystuen, we have to ensure that decision is made, and that we push forward in making that right decision in this timely manner for Dr. Crady, particularly in this volatile situation.
Thank you, Regent Albrecht. Is there a motion by members of the board?
I will so move.
The item has been moved by Regent Johnstone. I will once again ask for additional comments from members of the board. Yeah, Regent Lozar.
I just want to underscore a part of the discussion that we've had about looking at our incentives plan, our compensation plans across the university system, and ensuring that we are indeed prioritizing this discussion. I think it was a good discussion today, but that we're prioritizing this discussion in the short term to have the Board and Compensation Committee really look into this and come back to either our September meeting or our November meeting with some ideas around how we can create maybe perhaps a more comprehensive set of policies that will allow us to look at performance and the other incentives that we have, the retention, the recruitment, performance incentives, so that we are that we're following through on this discussion, so that this remains a top priority for this board.
Thank you, Regent Lozar. Great comments. Are there additional comments from members of the board? We've all heard the motion. It's now appropriate to open this up to additional comments that may be out there from our campuses or members of the public. Are there additional comments from the campuses or members of the public? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion by Regent Johnstone to approve this item, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
No.
There are two no's. Regent Lozar and Regent Sheehy. Thank you. Thank you for that great conversation. We will now move on to action item D, staff item from MSU Bozeman.
Vice President Terry Leese.
Terry Leese, are you on the phone with us?
Chair Tess, I am. Chair Tess, members of the board, this is Terry Leese in Bozeman, and we have one item on the agenda. It's we lost our wonderful Martha Potvin, Dr. Potvin, our provost, at the end of June. She relocated to another university. And in the interim, we have Dr. Robert Makwa, who was a civil engineering professor and then most recently the department head for the Department of Mathematics. And he was also a fellow on the president's staff here a couple of years ago, so I've worked with him pretty closely. That's our only item. His interim salary is posted, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer those.
Thank you. Regent Sheehy.
What was Dr. Potvin making? What salary is being reported?
She had a base salary of $229,824 and then a $15,000 stipend on top of that for a total of $244,824.
Thank you.
I move approval.
There's been a motion by Regent Johnstone for approval. Are there any additional comments from members of the board? Any additional comments or questions from members of the board? Seeing none, additional comments from the campuses or the public? Additional comments? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion passed. Action item D, staff item from the Office of the Commissioner of Higher Education. Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, members of the board, we have two retention adjustments before you. Both of these individuals were in searches for a different position. Both had elevated to a level of high consideration and final interview status. We felt like there's a high likelihood of them getting a job, and I have to say I'm one that doesn't necessarily think that sometimes change is a bad thing. I think people moving to do other things has a productive piece of it, but in this instance, we really felt like it was in the best interest of OG and the MUS to make an offer to retain these individuals. We did so, and with your approval, I'm happy to say that both of these individuals will be staying at OG.
Thank you, Commissioner. Comments from members of the board?
Yeah.
I just had a basic question. How often do we use retention adjustments? Is that something that's quite often used in the system?
Mr. Chair, Regional Ozark, we use retention adjustments quite often throughout the system. Saying earlier, I mean, I think there's rarely a week goes by that we don't face this with the number of 8,000 or 8,900 associates across the system. We face this issue often. If it involves OCHI, any member at OCHI needs to come before the board. That's just how we worded the delegation piece of this in 2006. So it draws special attention to them. But yeah, we use it often, and sometimes we're successful in it, and sometimes we aren't.
Regent Sheehy.
I have some real problems with this, and I'm just going to pick on the executive system for the commissioner. I apologize, but that's what's up before us. I've been on this board for 2 years, and this salary has increased from $49,000 in September of 2014 to a now projected, what is it now,
$59,000.
We've given normal raises twice during these 2 years. We gave a raise for equity of 9.23 in July of 2015. This salary has raised almost 20% in the 2 years that I've been on this board, from $49,000 to nearly $60,000. And while it's a very valuable position, I don't think we pay any other executive assistants. I'd be interested to know that. Do we pay other executive assistants within our colleges and universities anywhere near this amount? I looked just briefly at the tenure positions that we approved in May. I don't have any comparables on executive assistants. But we had a lot of tenure positions open, and at our smaller universities, they were making less than this. These are tenured professors at our institutions. If you can get a job that's higher paying than the one you're in, sometimes you should take it. But I don't think that this meets with our retention criteria. We're not supposed to give retention raises. I just don't see the difference between calling a 9% raise a year ago equity and calling this retention. So I think that the rise in this salary is precipitous, I just don't think it meets our criteria. I can't vote for this.
Mr. Chair, Regent Sheehy, we could have Kevin speak to the justification behind it. It is in our policy that we can do retention. I will tell you that the position that was sought was an administrative assistant, and it was advertised at the range that we are now moving to. I will tell you that when we hired Ms. Tabato, we hired her at considerably less than our current administrative assistant was making. We're now more back in the range of that. I can also tell you your other question is there administrative assistants that make more, and the answer is significantly more. I think one of our top administrative assistants in the system is more in the $82,000 to $84,000 range. It was there. I think what was adjusted a year ago, while it is relevant, it's not part of today's discussion, in that this truly was a retention adjustment made based on a pending offer actually within our system for an administrative assistant at one of the colleges. And so we sought to retain the individual. And I think, to be honest, I don't believe change is always bad. And I think sometimes if those opportunities are out there, go get them. I will tell you in terms of self-serving for this board, we do not have anyone really in the wings that is prepared to deal with the board meetings or trained to do that, and we do not have anybody that is currently helping that is willing to deal with the travel and some of the other pieces. And so, you know, we talked about this extensively in our office. It you know, all adjustments come with a certain amount of degradation to morale, and then you start all the comparisons, right, and challenging time in office life. But we felt like that the work performance has risen to a level that is consistent with where we were before, and to make a change right now would cause a disruption even at the board level that we didn't think was really in our best interest. And we don't have anybody sort of sitting on the sidelines that has been through the cycle in terms of scheduling these meetings and all that goes into moving the region's meetings around the state. And so we just felt like in this instance we needed to make the offer to retain.
I do think that if we're going to make these kinds of things, we should provide the documentation that our policy states. I didn't see any of that documentation, just that there was a number of
emails.
So,
Mr.
I have the same comment with respect to the other one as well, the two of them.
Mr. Would like Chair, I believe we absolutely could get that, and I believe that documentation was presented to Kevin. The with regard to Mr. Muffick, that position was another public position, so even the fact that he was one of two finalists was documented in the paper and beyond. So it was certainly there, and the conversations led toward a high likelihood that he would receive that offer. And in fact, that one, the retention that we made was less than the advertised range for that position. So in this case, we were able to make a small adjustment and yet still retain even below the advertised range of the other one, and why we went there.
Commissioner?
Yes, sir.
Kevin McRae here. I did provide 2 or 3 weeks ago, I think 2 weeks ago, to the regents the documentation for the two OCHE retention adjustments in its entirety. So if there are any regents who did not receive that in the email, I would be happy to provide that documentation again. We do make sure that we follow all of our guidelines before any recommendation goes forward. So, you know, you mentioned I could provide the background for the executive assistant pay history and what our guidelines are for equity adjustments and what they are for retention adjustments. At the time that the equity adjustment was recommended and approved by the board, it met the equity guidelines and criteria that you alluded to, the fact that the comparable position on one campus is a little bit north of $80,000 and the comparable position on the other campus is north of $60,000. That was the basis for the equity adjustment that met the criteria. Here we are a year later and we're talking about two individuals who were finalists in job searches. When we pay faculty retention adjustments, we don't require them to have an offer or to even participate in an interview like one of these two individuals did. We have approved faculty retention adjustments just to make sure that someone does not get on an airplane and go to an interview. So that's what this situation was. This was a retention adjustment and two individuals withdrawing from interviews in which they were finalists. And I did provide the criteria and the documentation to the regents, and I'd be happy to do that again if anybody did not receive it. Thank you.
Kevin, did you provide the other job offer or all five criteria?
The criteria in accordance with the board's guidelines. So we're not contending that in both cases that there was another job offer. That is not the standard. We pay faculty and other employees sometimes to notify the prospective employer that they are withdrawing before the interview is complete. So I'll find that email and I'll send it out again.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking is what was the there are 5 points in here for documentation required.
Right, and that's what I provided to the board. In fact, I'll find it right now and send it out again.
Yeah, just send it to me.
Okay.
Thank you, Kevin. Additional comments from members of the board? Regent Lozar?
Yeah. So I don't have an issue with the change in salary. I trust that the commissioner has looked at the work that these two individuals are doing and the value that they bring to the table. I'm going to support this. I just wish we weren't talking about retention, that we are talking about performance again, and that this is an opportunity for us to be celebrating increased performance or some additional work that's been done throughout the year. So something about the word retention and kind of going into another interview and looking for other jobs and then there's a compensation change because of that. I'd rather have us talking about all the great work that Ron and Amy are doing and the additional value that they're bringing to the table.
Very consistent messages in your words today, Regent Lozar. Thank you very much. Additional comments from members of this board? Regent Johnson?
An observation to the board. I would hope that we would devote as much energy and time and thought to the approval of a $1 billion budget in the future as we've spent on $85,000 of compensation change. I realize there's some principle involved here, but I'm a little concerned that we're very concerned about some of the weeds and not sufficiently concerned about some of the larger strategic considerations and issues that are facing this entity.
Thank you.
Well taken.
Well said. Additional comments from members of the board? Additional comments? Is there a moment? Regent Sheehy?
I have to tell you that my concern about this is actually one of the justifications for giving it, which is that it is self-serving and that we have the opportunity to review these employees because they are at OCHE and they do benefit us as board members, and I think they are entitled to the scrutiny that we should provide so that we make sure that we do not act in a self-serving way with respect to the employees who work directly for us as a board. I think that's a problem. And I think that the precipitous raises in some of these positions have to be looked at. I'd like to see comparisons with the universities. So that's my point.
Thank you. Additional comments? Seeing none, is there a motion to approve?
I'll make that motion, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Regent Nystuen. There's a motion on the table to approve action item E. Are there additional comments from the campuses or the public? Additional comments? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
The motion passes. We are now at a point where we will go on to the information part of today's agenda, and we will begin that conversation with the Level 1 memorandum. Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, I believe these are posted for information.
Dr. Seck, if you're available, can you speak to whether we need more than the notice provided here in terms of a comment?
Thank you, Commissioner and members of the board. Yes, the two level one approval memos you have before you is a part of the new academic program planning and approval process, and I'm very pleased to report that the chief academic officers have reviewed both of these memos over the course of the past 6 weeks since the last Board of Regents meeting in May, and have no concerns with it. The items in the level one before you for both the May memo and the June memo represent items where the board has either given our office the approval or has given the campuses themselves the approval. So no questions have been raised, and I'll stand for any questions you may have.
Thank you, Dr. Sack. Are there any questions from the board on this item, level one memorandum?
I would renew the comment that I made in the past that there's several hundred pages here, so I confess that I have not been through it in detail, and it would continue from my standpoint to be very helpful for my ability to provide appropriate overview here to have an executive summary with respect to these, so that I'm relying on the commissioner's office to do the evaluation and go primary oversight. If you're going to bring it to us and ask us for comments, it would be much a short executive summary that told us what the key elements of this of the memorandum were.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's my only observation. I did find the planning, the new planning format that's been developed this year to be helpful. That was much more user-friendly. I could understand that. I could get through it. I could understand what the key elements are.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, and we will, before these come before you as action items, the executive summary is something we've discussed at length and will absolutely be included as part of this.
I believe the level one is 284 pages, if I'm not mistaken.
Mr. Chair?
Dr. Sack.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Regent Johnstone, again, thank you for your comment. I do want to mention that part of the reason that we include all of the documentation at this level is that the documents then become a part of the official record as a part of being listed on this agenda. So that's one of the reasons that we do provide all of that information. But I also understand your desire to have an executive summary, and we will work on that.
My objection is not to the inclusion of the documents. My objection is not having an executive summary of the documents.
Thank you. Any additional comment on the level one memorandum? Yes, go ahead, Regent Berkey.
Thank you. So I just have a couple of questions, and this was before my time, before I joined the board, but I noticed on here a couple of moratoriums for licensed practical nurses with MSUB and then MSU Great Falls, and I'm just wondering, the healthcare industry seems to be such a growing sector within the state of Montana, as to why those are moving into the moratorium stage.
Mr. Chair, Regent Berkey, I can answer that question. Basically, through the work of the Healthcare Montana grant, the campuses created a common curriculum for the licensed practical nursing program, which is a certificate of applied studies. And so what you're seeing with the moratorium is the retirement of the old curriculum. So the licensed practical nurse program isn't going away. It's just we're replacing a revised curriculum, which has been the result of significant industry contributions and we're retiring the old curriculum.
Thank you.
Additional comments from members of the board about our level one memorandum? Seeing none, let's go to information item B, intent to plan proposals.
I actually think he spoke to both, but if Dr. Seck, if you have any additional comments on that, we have no concerns raised at this point with the consent plan or the plan proposal as presented.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, Commissioner Christian, that is correct. The chief academic officers across the system have reviewed the intent of plans which are submitted, and no questions have been raised.
Regent Albrecht.
Deputy Commissioner Seck, is this the beginning of implementing the new plan procedurally as far as intent to plan, so that we are more proactive in this procedure as opposed to reactive as we were prior?
Mr. Chair, Regent Albrecht, absolutely. This is these are the first intent to plans as a part of the new process. So we are definitely being proactive, and the fact that we've had the conversations with the chief academic officers has already started that communication process.
Thank you, Dr. Seck. Regent Lozar?
Just one comment. This being the sort of first round of the intent to plan, I just wanted to give kudos to the Office of Commissioner of Higher Education on what I think is a well-thought-through website for the campuses. I think it's really self-explanatory, really simple, and it allows not only the Board of Regents and folks within the university system to see what the institutions are thinking, but the rest of the state. So, job well done.
Thank you. Additional comments from members of the board on these information items? Seeing none, we will now go into public comments. Is there any public comment for the Board of Regents? Is there any public comment? Hearing none. I would like to thank everybody for joining us today. We wish you all a very fruitful summer, and we look forward to seeing everybody in person in Billings in September. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.